until next vacation.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Washington Gorge Action Program's Back to School fundraiser August 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. There will be a fashion show, live music, a silent auction, and dessert social. Washington Gorge Action Programs is a multi-purpose human service organization dedicated to helping individuals, families, and communities address basic human needs. Again, that's the Washington Gorge Action Program's Back to School fundraiser, August 23rd at the Columbia Gorge Interpretive Center, 990 Rock Creek Drive in Stevenson, Washington. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And stay tuned now for Healthcare Forum.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. In this series, we feature conversations with people who have special insights about health topics as diverse as environmental hazards, new and old medical treatments, and the benefits of universal health care. Sometimes we present an informal talk or even a lecture. Doing this program has enriched my life, and I hope it enriches yours. My guest today is Sarah Finger McDonald, and we're talking today about gun violence and ways to stop it or reduce it or control it at any rate. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
A lot to talk about here. A lot's been going on. First, let me ask you about yourself, how you got interested in this, and then let's go on to a little bit of history of Moms Demand Action and Gun Sense, two related organizations.
Right. I am the Oregon chapter leader for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. It's a group that started after the Sandy Hook shooting. I got involved in the February after the Sandy Hook shooting, so it's been about a year and a half now. And I really got involved because I'm a mom. Our group is not at all exclusive. We don't only allow moms in. We like to say if you had a mom, you can join. But I have elementary school age kids. And so the Sandy Hook shooting was just so shocking. You realizing that my son sat in the first classroom, the door that you come to when you walk into his classroom. I had always been a mother who enjoyed sending my children out into the world, and to all of a sudden feel fearful was really hard for me. And then I also had an experience with my son where I sat down to talk to him about the shooting at Sandy Hook because he was old enough that he would hear about it and he would ask questions. And so I wanted to be the person to talk to him about it. And he just started weeping. So I sat with this child on my lap, and my son is, he was 7 at the time, but he's a real big guy. And so I had this big child sitting on my lap just crying. And I realized at that point that all I could do was promise him that I would work to make sure that we found ways to stop that kind of thing from happening again.
Very interesting. Remind people where Sandy Hook is.
So Sandy Hook is in Newtown, Connecticut, and it was where 26 and 7-year-olds were killed along with their teachers in December of 2012.
Yes, fairly recently, and such a huge one. We've had plenty of smaller ones that are probably just as tragic, but then to magnify it, and the young age.
And I think that's what really, I think for a lot of people, just how young those children were and that they were in their classrooms where they should be safe and learning was just shocking. And I think for a lot of moms, it was kind of like 9/11, where it was just so awful that things were not the same afterwards.
Things were not the same. And so where did it get started then?
It's a nationwide movement. It was started by a mother sitting at her kitchen counter with her computer looking for groups because she said Shannon Watts She said she wanted to find a group like MAD for gun violence, that there should be a group like that. And she couldn't find one, so she started a Facebook page. And immediately started getting offers to help.
And let me just interrupt. MAD is Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And I remember back in the 80s, that was very prominent. One of the reasons I remember, I was on a postdoc in Connecticut at a alcohol research institute. And so, of course, we were very aware of it.
Right. Yeah, I think that we sort of feel, once you get the moms involved, things are going to move because we're working. And it's not just moms, again, but we're working with the attitude that this is to improve society for our kids, mm-hmm. that it's not just for us. This is for the future.
For the future, for the next generations. It got to be so big that it needed to be addressed at that time. So that group got started and spread around the country. And then yourself, you chair the Oregon chapter. And
right.
do you have
members across the state? Initially, there were chapters sort of started in small locales or cities or regions. And so we started in Oregon with chapters in Portland and a Mid-Willamette chapter that we started here in Corvallis and a chapter in Southern Oregon. And we are now all merged into one chapter. Mm. Mostly because, especially when we're working on state legislature, we don't want to be repeating each other. So if we can all work together as one chapter with ambassadors and groups across the state, it's much more efficient.
And you must be mostly linked through the internet.
We are linked through the internet. And social media has been a huge part of what we do. So, you know, emails to members, but also Facebook pages and Twitter. I think that's been really important for keeping the message in the public eye and also for keeping those of us who are really active motivated, because I know that I have low points where, you know, I am, you know, mother of young kids, I work. This is not something I really would have thought I had time to do a year and a half ago. But you know, at those low points, having that support system of people who I've met and come in contact with either in person or online is really important, because when I'm at a low point, I'll get encouragement or I'll see something really positive happening in Virginia or in Colorado. And it makes me think, okay, this is, we are moving forward, as frustrated as I am today. We're going somewhere.
I just looked on the internet a little bit ago and I got a message about a protest at Target.
Right.
And right now I'm not remembering in what city.
We've had several. There was one in Virginia, I think that may have been what you saw, because the moms with their signs and their kids and strollers were asked to leave. But Target is not asking the people carrying, open carrying long guns into their stores to leave.
Right. And the protest was about their having had a big, I don't know, was it a demonstration or an open carry in their parking lot, their own parking lot.
Right.
Which seems really very, very strange.
Yeah, that's part of our efforts, too. We're working on some legislation, but we also know that gun violence prevention has to be brought about through cultural change as much as it has to be brought about through legislative change. And it's just like drunk driving. I mean, now we can not imagine drinking and driving alone, much less with our kids in the car. And so there was a cultural change and an attitude change that happened there. And so that needs to happen with guns also. And while we absolutely respect the Second Amendment right to bear arms, we think that there are reasonable restrictions that can make us all safer that can be put on that right. There are restrictions on all our rights. And when it's a right to carry a deadly weapon, we just need to be responsible and thoughtful about where we take advantage of that right. And so open carrying has become more of an issue. And we've had some luck with Starbucks and with Chipotle and some other corporations that have, in response to our protests or urging petitions that we've done, have put into place policies that they do not want open carry in their stores.
I hadn't realized that Starbucks had changed that. Now, I remember when they went for it, and there were lots of cartoons. I read Doonesbury.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. But, you know, right now I'm not remembering the reversal, but it happened, eh?
It did happen. So they were the first, and Chipotle and Chili's, and there are other stores, Joann Fabrics and...
Joann Fabrics, my goodness.
Well, they already had a policy in place, so they're on our good list. Costco's on our good list. It would be, if you go to the Moms Demand Action website, you can find information about the successes we've had with companies who've put into place policies restricting open carry and stores that have always had restrictions on open carry. IKEA doesn't allow firearms in their stores. You know, it's one of those things that we just need to move forward. And the more we think about where guns should be carried in public, and the more companies think about, you know, the safety and comfort of their customers, you know, I think the more change we'll see in policies. Because, you know, even if somebody's not a danger, the environment that's created when someone's open carrying a handgun or a long gun is just, you know, it wouldn't make me want to shop and spend money somewhere.
No, and it wouldn't make you want to be there. And if you did need to be there, you would probably, not you personally, but some people would say, well, I have to be having one too.
Right.
Because otherwise, these idiots are going to kill me. That's really Wild West mentality, isn't it?
It is Wild West mentality. And it's creating an environment and a feeling in the environment that's just not where we want our kids to be. We can't tell a good guy with a gun from a bad guy with a gun. And we shouldn't have to be worried when we're walking down the aisle of a Target or buying coffee whether we are safe to be there ourselves or we're safe to be there with our kids.
And that's on your website.
There's information about that, corporate responsibility, on our website.
And it's momsdemandaction.org. .org. Excellent.
Easy one. You can find us.
Right. Easy to find.
And we have Facebook pages, too. So if people are on Facebook, if you look for Moms Demand Action, there's a national Facebook page. But then there are also Facebook pages for each of the state chapters. So there's a Moms Demand Action Oregon chapter page, too.
Now, I should say what day this is. This is Tuesday, July 1. And I also noticed that at our 4th of July parade, which is Friday. And I should tell people our 4th of July parade here is really low key.
It's great.
All people have to do, groups of any type, and there are all kinds of groups, probably scout groups, and I've been there with Bill of Rights groups in the past where we've passed out constitutions. All you have to do is show up.
Right. And we will show up.
Show up, and it's a relatively short walk, but slow enough because there tend to be quite a few people watching, as I recall.
It sort of feels like half of Corvallis is watching and half of Corvallis is marching. And we marched last year, and it was great fun. We got cheered by people as we went by with our banner, and so we'll be marching this year again with our t-shirts and our signs and pulled out the red, white, and blue streamers so that our kids can all decorate their scooters and their wagons. And
so you'll have children, adults, and probably pets, I bet.
Yeah, I can't remember if anybody had a pet last year, but we certainly wouldn't turn a pet away.
I've seen pets there. It's a good event. But it just indicates the kind of things that you might do. Any other events of that sort coming up?
We've had tables at farmers markets. We had a table at the family fair at the Cardiff 5K on Mother's Day weekend. We've had tables at Sunday Parkways events in Portland the last 2 months that have been really successful. I think they signed up like 180 people last week when they were there.
Signed them up, got them to sign a petition, join an email list.
They'll be added to our email list, but one of our campaigns right now is signing up Gun Sense voters. And it's a pledge to be a Gun Sense voter, which means that you will, when you're deciding who to vote for, you will vote for candidates who take keeping our community safe and reducing gun violence seriously and will work to do that. And the things that we think candidates should be supporting are expanded background checks so that we can require background checks on private sales. In Oregon, we do require background checks at gun shows when there's more than 25 weapons for sale, but that still leaves a lot of sales that happen without a background check. We think that we should be working to both educate and legislate for safe storage of firearms, so hold adults responsible if children get access to guns, and promote locking up guns or using trigger locks and storing your guns locked in away from ammunition so that curious children can't get their hands on them. There are far too many accidental shootings. I think it's about 2 a week that happen in the United States where children find a gun and
just pull a trigger.
I just can't imagine how awful that would be as a parent, but it's totally preventable. We also know that the gun that was used in the Clackamas Town Center was taken out of a friend's house. That gun was not secured. So that shooter had easy access to a gun. So things like that would help prevent some shootings too, just keeping guns locked so people who shouldn't have them can't have them. And we also would like to work on this whole issue of open carry and where guns are appropriate and what kinds of guns are appropriate and where they should be carried. And good laws to prevent gun trafficking and to prevent straw purchases of guns. We were really happy to see the Supreme Court decide that it is illegal to be a straw purchaser and to buy a gun for somebody else at a gun store.
Oh, straw purchaser. That's an interesting term. It's clear what it means.
The Supreme Court just made a good decision for us recently on that one. So we're not taking away guns. Law-abiding citizens will still be able to use and purchase guns for, you know, hunting or sports shooting or personal protection, whatever they need them for. But we think we should be working hard to keep guns out of the hands of, you know, felons and domestic abusers and the mentally ill and children.
And definitely children. So that's the agenda. Is there anything specific in Oregon? You know, we have a full legislative session coming up again.
We'll be working on some things. Yeah, the bills aren't all written.
Who are your favorite senators, or are there any specific senators or representatives that likely would want to be a sponsor? Because that's always something you have to do.
Find sponsors.
I just wondered whether you've found those. And of course, it'll be the representatives all have to be elected again. And
right.
Some aren't running. And some who have been representatives, like ours here, will be running instead in the Senate. And
running against a Republican, Betsy Close, who does not have much gun sense.
And has made that clear, I guess.
Betsy Close is on the Senate Judiciary Committee and has twice voted against background check bills.
Yeah, so, I hadn't realized that.
Yes.
Some are not as obvious as she may be because she's had an opportunity.
She's had an opportunity to vote. Right, and we have definite supporters. Jenny Burdick in Portland has been a longtime supporter of just common sense legislation. Alyssa Kinney Geyer has been very supportive. Floyd Przanski in Eugene has been great, and he's the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, so he's worked hard to work reasonable compromises so that we can try to get legislation passed. I've been involved in this through two legislative sessions, have not gotten the bills through yet, but they have stayed viable longer than any bills ever used to, and we're getting more and more support. We are working hard with the Oregon Alliance to Prevent Gun Violence, which is Moms Demand Action and Ceasefire Oregon and the Brady Campaign, so sort of the traditional gun violence prevention groups, but then also medical groups, doctors groups, and PTA and faith-based organizations. So lots of groups from different pieces of society coming together. We're becoming a stronger coalition within the state and working more and more with lawmakers to craft bills.
One thing that some of the health groups locally do every year before an election is candidates' presentation. Candidates are asked questions specifically about various health topics. Mm-hmm. And would you consider this a public health issue that might want to enter some questions there? Or, of course, at some point, it would be possible to have a town hall of sorts and invite candidates, all of them, any who can possibly come. Get it out in the open in time to make a difference and have a track on what people think.
And, you know, I think gun violence prevention is definitely a question that could be brought up at a public health meeting. When you have between 6 and 7 children a day shot and killed, and that's children and teens, so not just your young children, but older children too, and 30,000 Americans shot and killed every year. And it's a huge issue with domestic violence because the likelihood that a woman will be murdered by an abusive partner goes way up if there are guns in the situation. And we know that things like universal background checks, where there are background checks required on all handgun purchases, reduce the number of women murdered by their partners by up to 38%. So it's a major issue. It's safety, preventing unnecessary death and unnecessary injury. I mean, that's just the number of people who are killed, but yeah, there are people killed who are shot and have to deal with the repercussions of that, and their families have to deal with the repercussions of that for the rest of their lives.
We usually know about a death because it has to be registered, and sometimes an injury one doesn't know if it isn't registered in some way. So in looking at the deaths, you know that there's something more out there and don't know exactly how much.
And we know that there are tools like universal background checks that if we were require background checks on all sales at gun shows and private sales in addition to gun stores, that we know that reduces gun violence. We know that reduces death. We know that that's a good tool to use to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. No, it's not a silver bullet. There's not a silver bullet to any problem. We're never going to have one solution that's going to solve, you know, it's going to prevent every mass shooting and every domestic violence event or anything. But we know that there are things like background checks, like keeping guns locked up so children can't get them, that will help reduce this death toll that happens in the United States every year.
I'm glad that you mentioned that concept, because the opposition says, well, that won't stop all of these. Duh. What will stop all of whatever? Nothing.
I feel like that's way too often used as an excuse to do nothing.
It is.
I'm sorry, that's inexcusable at this point. Doing nothing has gotten us to where we are today, and where we are today is, you know, embarrassing when it's compared to the rest of the world. We should be able to keep our citizens, and especially our children, safe.
Talking about other countries, not every country has the open laws about gun ownership, and of course there's a history to that in terms of being a younger country and having more open spaces and
frontier. I was just reading the Little House on the Prairie books with my daughter. They talk a lot about Pa's gun, and she knows what I work on. So she said something about, why does Pa have this gun they keep talking about? And I said, well, Pa lives out in the wilderness, and he is a trapper and a hunter, and he uses his gun to provide food for his family. The way he's using his gun is totally appropriate. And even today, hunters can go out and hunt. But that doesn't mean that anyone who wants a gun should buy one at any time they want one.
All that literature I'd forgotten all about.
I had forgotten all about Pa's gun until I read it again. Didn't make an impression on me when I read it.
Well, she's attuned to some things that you're doing.
Right.
Good for her.
As frustrating and as time consuming as all this work is, it's the support of the amazing people I've met doing this work that will keep me going. And it's also my kids, because I think even if this is taking my time, you know, maybe I'm not doing other volunteer work that I might do otherwise because I'm spending time doing this work, I feel like it's something that's really important. It's something that's working to make a stronger community and a stronger country. And I know my kids watch what I'm doing, and I know my kids will learn from it, that, you know, at some point, if they have an issue that's important to them, they will see that, you know what, you can call up your representative and go make an appointment and sit down and talk to them, and you can talk to people about voting on these issues that are important. I think there are lessons to be learned for them.
And our legislature is wonderful in that you can go in and people are quite happy to see you.
Right.
And as some of them have said, they really like to see citizen lobbyists. And to see a real person with a concern is a treat. Oh, we mentioned that we were going to talk a little about the history of some of these other groups. And have you thought about why some of the other groups have flourished for a while and then faded, and how to avoid that? You mentioned also that a group had arisen after the Columbine incident.
And that organization still exists, the Million Mile March. It's part of the Brady campaign. And so they are still active, and they had some really good successes, especially at the state level. And we did get the Brady bill through. So we got the start of background checks. We have sort of historically seen efforts from the gun violence prevention side peak and fade historically. I think what's really different this time is that there is so much social media, so that issues can be kept in the public eye. Our group is very active both on Facebook and on Twitter, so information is passed back and forth. We have easy access to news from across the country, so as things, both as tragedies happen and as successes happen, we get that news very easily. I've been very impressed, and this is tooting our horn, but the people who've gotten involved with their organization, and I don't know the people who started the Million Mile March, and they, I'm sure, were fabulous also, but the people who are working on this issue are so impressive and are so dedicated. And I think a lot of us are just done with the status quo. So as you know, we're going to keep working at it, and we're going to use all the skills that we have from other careers and experiences we have to make sure that things really happen.
And bring it into a public health arena again, as it was in the 80s. There were nationally funded studies. For instance, there was a study of suicides looking at whether the individuals had guns in their home or not, and they did all the appropriate things, matching people with and without guns for things like income, neighborhood, job, appropriate sociological factors, and found a 4-to-1 ratio with guns in the home. They were more likely to actually complete a suicide.
Right. Guns are very efficient. So if somebody has an impulsive suicide tendency where right now they're going to do it, if they have access to that gun, they're much likely to be successful. They don't get a chance to back out.
To back out or to think about it or to have someone else intervene.
And unfortunately, you're talking about the research. One of the things that's happened as the gun lobby has had its way with legislation and funding is that research into the causes of gun violence and the tools we can use to prevent gun violence has really not been happening. There has not been funding for it. The CDC has not been able to fund gun violence research.
There was even a bill passed at that time
that took the funding away. And so we're seeing some of that get loosened up, and for things like child access prevention, to really be able to do some research and look at the different tools we have and whether the new technologies that are biometric indicators that keep a gun from being fired by anyone but its owner or would be effective at preventing some of that. And we don't, with things like that, we don't know because we haven't been able to do the research. And it's tragic because that means we don't have the tools to save those lives.
And there could be new tools. I was talking to someone in public health today, in environmental health, about a wristband that they can put on people that will tell what pollutants are in their environment. And so it's not speculative. And who would have thought of that 15 years ago?
Right. And there's a gun that's now on the market that has not gotten a good response from the gun lobby, sadly. The owner would have a watch that, I don't know all the details of the technology, but the watch can communicate with the gun. And so the gun can't be fired unless it's in the hand of somebody who has that wristband, or I call it a watch, but your wristband on, so that it's, essentially restricting access to that gun.
And maybe another analogy would be restricting access to the ability to start your car if it senses that the driver is inebriated.
Right.
That's a technology that isn't very old either.
No.
Technology, we can't think that it will save us, but if we used it smartly, maybe we would make a little more progress.
Make some progress. And, again, there's not going to be one silver bullet, but if we can put these tools into place, make people safer while respecting the Second Amendment, we should do it. We should make people safe. We should save lives.
Sarah McDonald, thank you very much for joining us on this program today, and we wish you luck, and we'll keep an eye.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall and recorded with the aid of Joe Magner of Anabyte Electronics and Recording in Corvallis, Oregon. Theme music was composed by Lori Childers and played by Lori Childers and Kent White.
And that concludes the Monday Morning Radio Zine. Stay tuned now for noon headlines, and that will be followed by the Noontime Jamboree. Thanks for listening, and thank you, KABU members, for your support. Make sure to become a member if you are not one yet. You can do that. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. You do have it tuned to KBOO in Portland.
And now, the KABU News at Noon for August 18th, 2014. Monsoon floods have killed over 180 people and left thousands more displaced in Nepal and India. The recent floods have hit poor farmers the hardest, washing away mud and straw homes. most of the villages have become inaccessible by road, forcing emergency responders to use boats and helicopters. The Communist Party of Nepal disrupted parliament to demand that the government declare a state of emergency. Three gang-related shootings across different corners of Portland left one woman dead and several injured on Sunday. Just after midnight, three people were wounded by gunfire in a dispute outside a club downtown. A few hours later, 21-year-old Irvewa Herring was fatally shot in her apartment in southeast Portland. Then, around 11 p.m. Sunday night, a man was wounded by gunfire in Northgate Park after a fight broke out between several men. The city has planned a meeting for Monday night to address the rise of gang-related violence in Portland. Protests in Ferguson, Missouri over the killing of Michael Brown by a police officer continued Sunday night. Police with armored vehicles, shields, and gas masks fired tear gas to clear the streets of protesters hours before the state-imposed midnight curfew. Among those hit with tear gas was an 8-year-old boy. Hundreds of people in Portland have rallied in support of the protests in Ferguson. Joanne Hardesty spoke at a rally organized by Portland Solidarity with Ferguson over the weekend.
I don't want you to get confused because I understand they're asking the federal government to investigate the latest killing, Michael Brown. But I don't want you to get confused. Who do you think gave those military weapons to the police department?
That's right.
You stand for justice.
Yes.
This is about whether or not you value every black, brown, white, red, yellow life on this planet. Don't get confused.
Former Senator James M. Jeffers